This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. Do you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help children really understand and master topics in a fun way with positive feedback. I mean, when Eleanor was young, she really, really struggled with math, and a program like IXL would have really helped her to get ahead, to keep up, study for a test. It's a great tool.
Don't miss out. One in four students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And happier listeners get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/happier. Visit IXL.com/happier to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Hello, and welcome to Happier, a podcast where we talk about cutting-edge science, the wisdom of the ages, and our own experiences in trying to be happier. We're sisters, so we don't let ourselves get away with much. This week, our Try This at Home is about photographs, and we'll also revisit an old story. I'm Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature. I'm in New York City, and with me is my sister, Elizabeth Kraft, who's a big source of happiness for me.
Aw, that's me, Elizabeth Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA. And Gretchen, I am definitely a work in progress.
In episode 17, we talked about my precious, our term for the things that we love that are bad for us. It gets its name from Gollum, the character in The Lord of the Rings, who refers to the ring that he carries as his precious. It's precious, but it's killing him. And we talked about our preciouses. Elizabeth said her precious was reality TV. My precious, unconventionally, is Greek yogurt.
And it was great, Gretchen. A lot of people wrote in and called in with their preciouses. Somebody's was the iPhone 6 Plus, very specific, and I'm sure a lot of people share that.
Yeah.
Netflix was somebody's precious, and she actually canceled her subscription and then the next month started it up again because she decided she didn't want to give up her precious.
It's precious.
Beer was someone's precious. This was interesting. Somebody loves her Mondays and doesn't want anyone intruding in her Mondays. And this was actually a bit of a theme. A bunch of people let us know that they really jealously guard their time and don't want anyone interfering. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Another thing was somebody wrote on the Facebook page about whether her daughter's special toy was a precious. And really, we use the technical term, the way we use precious, is that it's something that you love, but it's bad for you. Like it's somehow undermining your happiness. So something like a child's special toy, it's precious, but it's not bad for you. But I have to say, Elizabeth, when I read about this precious toy, I had to think, of course, of your precious, your dear, dear blankie.
Yes, my blankie. I've had my blankie forever. And I still sleep with my blankie every night. Adam is well acquainted with my blankie. Jack knows about my blankie. I've got a pink blankie. He's got a blue blankie. And everyone always said to mom, well, it's not like she'll take it with her to college. But guess what? I did.
No, I remember when you were going when you were going to have Jack, I was like, well, what's the plan for your blankie? Are you going to take your blankie when you go to the hospital? You had a whole plan.
Yeah, I was too risky. Blankie stayed at home for that because I didn't want to risk losing my blankie at Cedars. But I will say I used to always have a plan in place if the house caught on fire, how I would get, blankie out first. But now that I have Jack, he takes priority. and the cat, and then the blankie is third, assuming Adam can take care of himself. So I think that, you know, I think that that's fine.
We'll post a picture of Alyssa's blankie on GretchenRubin.com if you're dying to see what this precious memento is. And we'd love to hear, we heard about what people's preciouses were. We'd love to hear what people's special toy is, too. That's so fun to hear about. So this week, our Try This at Home tip is to take photos of everyday life. And that's everyday life, because we tend to take a lot of pictures when we're on vacation or we're like at some special museum or some special, you know, historical spot. But Elizabeth, I don't know about you, but when I look back at old photographs, I'm so much more interested in like what my dorm room looked like than like my visit to the Eiffel Tower.
Oh, totally. I mean, I'm thinking of a picture I actually have of you and Jamie that I took the first time I met Jamie in my summer dorm room at Columbia. And there's just stuff piled everywhere. I mean, Jamie must have thought he was getting, you know, like the psycho for a potential sister-in-law. So I think this is a great idea. I mean, I was actually thinking, you know how you have the one sentence journal?
Yeah.
I was thinking, well, maybe you could do a one photo a day journal.
I've heard from a lot of people who do that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then you get like your kids' preschool and what, you know, your favorite local restaurants and all this stuff that changes over time.
Well, and this is a thing where technology really can make things easier. Like I use Instagram and Pinterest, like just to take a picture like, ooh, look at these cool cobblestones, or, oh, I love the FedEx logo with the hidden arrow in it. And then I've also heard of people doing this thing where you take like a 1 second video and then make it into one thing a day, and then you make it into one thing at the end of the year. And so it sort of captures these evanescent moments, but in a way that's manageable.
Oh, that's great.
You know how, like, if you go to a children's library, there are those books called, like, Everyday Life in Ancient Rome. And it's, like,
yes,
about, like, a 10-year-old boy and his 8-year-old sister, like, living their life. And it's a lesson in the form of a story. I was thinking it would be hilarious to do, like, Everyday Life in Encino, or, you know, Everyday Life on the Upper East Side. And like, here's the grocery store in here. Because I feel like when I look back, it's all the most mundane things that I care about. But I have no record of it because it was so ordinary. I was never remarkable enough to take a picture of it.
Yeah, and also things change. So the grocery store isn't there anymore, and you know the house changes because you've redecorated. And I mean, I know you've told me about the Yale Law School pictures you have.
No, right? Because when Jamie and I met, we met in the Yale Law School library because our carrels, that's like our desks, were back to back, and so that's how I met, and it was incredibly romantic.
Yeah.
I actually took a picture of our carrels, you know, in the first throes of love, and then I went back, and they'd completely renovated the library, and all the carrels are gone, and so I'm so happy I have my picture of that. Because you're right, it's all changed. I can't go back and look at it again, even if I want to. So one of the things is to never forget how easy it is to forget, and to look for ways to take pictures of everyday life, or to find other ways of memorializing just your ordinary routine.
And send us your pictures of everyday life. I'd love to see them.
Or if you have any cool ways, like the 1 second a day video, or use Instagram in an interesting way, we'd love to hear about different strategies that people use. There are some stories from our mother's life that I love to hear about. I love hearing about how she played with a tin dollhouse when she was a girl. And just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for our families forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mother and mother figures for years to come. And it makes a wonderful keepsake book so you never, never lose these wonderful stories and memories.
Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, like, what was your favorite toy as a little girl, or what was your first job? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/happier. That's storyworth.com/happier to save $10 on your first purchase. Gretchen, on your site, you sometimes write these essays, which is what you call your posts when it's about a big idea.
Mm-hmm.
A say means an analysis or examination, and that's what you do. And so this week, we are going to have an essay.
Yeah, in episode 22, we had as our guest Roseanne Cash, the singer, songwriter, author. And she said many, many interesting things, but she told one story in particular that really resonated with us that we were talking about. So let's listen to it again.
For me and John, he can be very hard on me. And
not, like high standards?
Yes, high standards hard, not punitive hard.
Right,
but
right.
And sometimes I want to get away from that and go to somebody who thinks I'm just great. Everything I do is great.
You're awesome.
You're so awesome. Yeah. Every word out of your mouth is just so awesome.
First take. There we go. We did it.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, this is classic. Last year, I was doing a guest session on somebody else's album. And John, we were in Nashville, and it was this band, Hardworking Americans, and they asked me to sing on the song. So John just went with me to hang out. This is so unusual for John. He does not go hang out at other sessions. So he was sitting.
He's kind of a workaholic.
He is. So he was sitting in the other room, and I finished the session, and we left. He didn't say anything. I said, "So how'd you like it?" He goes, "I would have pushed you harder."
But in a way, that's a compliment too.
Yeah.
But it gets tiring.
It gets exhausting.
And the thing about this story is it really encapsulates a paradox in our relationships. And this is what we were talking about. We want the people close to us to accept us unconditionally, to think we're awesome. But we also kind of want them to expect the best from us. And also, that's how we feel about other people. We love them unconditionally, and yet maybe we want to push them harder, right?
Yeah. Oh, totally. I mean, this reminds me of a story I actually told on this podcast about Adam. I gave him a script to read, and he, you know, for critique, and he came back and started giving me notes, and I got incredibly angry and upset because I really just wanted him to say it was great.
Yeah.
But of course, he wanted to make it better because that's why I'd given it to him. And so it's that thing where you have to figure out how to navigate that. It's kind of difficult.
Right. It's this tension between sort of two modes of being. And I think, like, when you were talking about that thing with Adam, one of the things you said is, like, you should have said to him, this is one of those moments when I want you to tell me I'm awesome. This is not one
right.
of those moments when I want you to help me, I don't want you to push me harder. But I feel this way, like, with my children, too. Like, you know, on the one hand, I'm like, you're just great the way you are, and just kick back and enjoy your childhood. Everything's going to work out in the end. And then the other part of me is like, you really need to drill on the multiplication tables. I know you can get faster, or I know you can make that English essay better if you just go over it for the seventh time. I know it's in you to, like, take it up a notch. You know, it's this constant thing of, like, going back and forth between these two modes.
Yeah, and, you know, having sort of like Roseanne and her husband are creative partners, I have a writing partner, Sarah, and we go through this all the time because our dynamic is that we're supposed to bring out the best in each other. That's how we succeed. At the same time, it can get very irritating to have somebody that you spend a lot of time with, you know, pushing you harder and not just saying, hey, great scene, awesome job. I think you're such an amazing writer. And I think, you know, over the years, we've gotten better and better at sort of navigating that that line. But look, our whole job, not just between the two of us, is to take criticism.
Yeah.
And it's hard to have people push you like that, especially when you've really put yourself on the line. You know, like Roseanne in her story, it's like she put so much of herself, obviously, into the music. And I'm sure then to have John say, well, you could have done better, isn't a great thing to hear. But of course, that's why she loves him so much. Part of it is because he can say that.
But also, I think sometimes it's easier to just say you're awesome and not to, like,
yes.
take on the onus of saying you can push yourself harder. And I think of this with my agent, Christy Fletcher, who I'm super close to, who's just brilliant and is, like, this tremendous kind of guide to me. And I think with all my books, if you read them once they're written, they look like the structure was totally obvious. But in each case, it was, like, totally blew my mind to try to figure out the right structure and the tone and how to work in the research and all this. And I remember when I was writing the Happiness Project, I wrote a whole draft. She said, no, it's not working. I wrote a whole other draft of, you know, like two sample chapters. She said, it's not working. Third draft, all the, you know, complete rewrite. No, it's not working. Did another rewrite, which I really liked. And I got an email from her that I will never forget. And it just said, I am so sorry to write this email, but you're just not there yet. I know you can get there, but this is not it. And I thought it would have been so much easier to be like, this is awesome.
Yes.
Great. Let's just go move forward. But she had to say, like in John's word, I'm going to push you harder.
Yeah. And that's why she's such a great agent.
Yeah.
And friend.
But, you know, it's like one of these things is the opposite of a profound truth is also true. And I think that's the tension. Love is unconditional and love is demanding. Love accepts you just as you are, and love insists that you push yourself. And it's just, we just get caught up in that tension.
Yeah. And now, of course, that we've put this out there, our producer, Henry, is probably going to feel compelled to push us harder. So I'm expecting notes at the end of this podcast.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, let us know if this rang true for you, if you've ever been caught in a moment where you wanted awesome and you got pushed harder, or you wanted to get pushed harder and you got awesome, or, you know, whether this essay rings a bell with you.
Hi, Gretchen and Elizabeth. This is Andre from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm a huge fan of your podcast, and I listen to it religiously. Recently, my husband and I and our two small children moved to a new city for a career opportunity for me. In our previous city, we lived there for over 12 years, and over the last couple of years, I would say that we were, as a family, very happy. And while I can see a lot of positive things about our new city, the school that our kids attend, and our neighborhood, I obsessively worry that we won't be as happy in our new city as we were in our old city. How do we transfer or recreate the happiness from our old home to our new home? Thank you so much.
Well, Gretch, it sounds to me like Andre is sort of in mourning for her old city. She loved it. She was happy there. And now here she is in a new place and she hasn't, you know, given up the old place yet, which makes perfect sense.
Right.
What I would suggest she does is start rituals in this new city.
Yeah.
So I'm sure her family had their favorite pancake place, favorite, you know, church, if they went to church, favorite library, all of those things. And I think she should start doing these same rituals in the new city. And then it's like these ties will start to form.
Yeah. And the other thing is to kind of try to throw yourself out there. And if there's ways to, you know, volunteer at school so that maybe you get to meet more parents, or she's got a new job, so presumably she'll be meeting a ton of new people from work. So that's great. You know, walking around the neighborhood, meeting your neighbors. It's hard to meet a lot of new people, but it's really important. And that's part of what makes you feel at home in your neighborhood, is if you feel like you're surrounded by people that you know and you're interested in seeing and care for.
Yeah. And as for what I was saying a second ago, I'm just thinking like you have not relationships just with people, but also with places. Like think about Winstead's, our favorite burger place in Kansas City. I feel that's a very dynamic relationship that I have with Winstead's. And it brings me an enormous amount of pleasure. It's like a security blanket. So I think she needs to find her Winstead's.
Right. Yeah. Those places, those special places that are so close to your heart. But here's something that's very interesting and I hope she finds encouraging. Another bit of happiness research is when you look at what are the predictors of whether somebody's going to be happy in the future, one of the best predictors of whether you're going to be happy in the future is whether you've been happy in the past. And she was very happy where she was before, which makes it seem like she's probably going to be very happy where she is now. But like you say, she has to just build up the relationships with the places and the people and the rituals that are going to recreate that special connection that she had going forward.
And Gretchen, I must point out there's more on this subject in your book, Happier at Home, one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's all about happiness at home.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive.
I know that when I've been hiring, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to find quality candidates. It's really hard to handle the process. Hiring is easy when you have lots of quality candidates, like with LinkedIn Jobs. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Now it's time for demerits and gold stars.
So, Elizabeth, I'm up for a demerit. And can your gold star for this week be that you're going to let me talk the whole time about my demerit and just like give me advice and solace?
Absolutely. Diving into your happiness demerit will give me great pleasure.
Okay,
let's
good.
Do it.
Okay, pleasure and a gold star. Okay, so this is what it is. My two daughters, Eliza and Eleanor, who are age 16 and 10, desperately want a dog. And my husband's game for a dog. Like, he wouldn't come home and say, hey, honey, let's get a dog. But he's like, yeah, that's cool. Let's get a dog. Amazing. And my demerit is that I am just this killjoy who does not want a dog.
Oh, that's a big one. That's like, there's no middle ground there. Either get the dog or you don't get the dog.
Yeah, no. Yeah, the ideal middle ground would be like we post a picture of a dog on a refrigerator.
Right. Well, that's, yeah, for you. Now, I'm guessing, you know, I'm thinking back to our own childhood. We had Patty Wack.
Our schnauzer.
Our dog, yeah, who I desperately wanted in third grade. And I wore mom and dad down and we got a dog.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing the main reason you don't want a dog is because you think the same thing will happen to you that happened to mom, which is she ended up doing 99.9% of all the Patty Wack, you know, caregiving.
Yeah. No, and this is what I was saying to my family. Is I was like, if I was going to have a dog the way you're going to have a dog, I'd be totally fine with having a dog. If I could walk it every once in a while and like put some dog food in the dog dish and then like buy a bone from the pet store, that'd be great. But I'm like, I'm the one realistically where that like if the dog is throwing up in the middle of the day, I'm going to clean it up. If the dog has to go to the groomers, I'm going to take it. If the dog gets sick in the middle of the day and like shaking with fear because the little dog hates going to the vet so much, that's going to be me. And my husband, Jamie, was like, well, I'll do it. And I'm like, yeah, but look, realistically, yes, you say you're right. Going to do it. And if we get a dog, I'm going to hold you to that, like as if you signed in blood. But it's the middle of the day. You're in a suit in Midtown in a meeting with 10 people. I'm in yoga clothes in my office, you know, writing a blog post. It's just going to be the sensible solution.
Yeah, it's going to be on you. And by the way, Eliza and Eleanor are going to be out of the house eventually.
Yeah, Eliza's going to be gone in 2 years. Eleanor, I mean, it all passes so in a flash. And the thing about me is, like, I hate errands. I hate trouble. I hate, like, you know, I hate calling. So I hate, like, call to make an appointment and then make an appointment and then go. And it sort of seems like it takes up the whole day. And
well, Gretch, let me ask you this. Do you like dogs?
If we had a dog, I would love our dog. I feel confident about that.
And I'm sure you would love the dogs of all of our listeners who listen to us while they're walking their dogs.
Yes, your dog, you podcast listeners, yes, love your dogs. Yes, we love your dogs.
All right, Gretch, so I've heard why you don't want a dog, but I know you're like the research nut, and I know you've got research about the good things about having a pet.
Yes. No. So I see very clearly why I don't want a dog, but I also see that it would make my family really happy. And there's so much research showing that pets make people happier and also healthier. For instance, people who own dogs get more exercise and enjoy it more than people who belong to gyms. It's less stress. It helps people have less depression. You know, it's all the joy of that unconditional love. Relationships, we were just talking a minute ago, how relationships make people happy, relationships with dogs. So many people say like, oh, you know, you walk in the house and your dog is so happy to see you. You know, and a friend of mine said, he goes, you know, if you're thinking about whether to go to law school and you're not sure whether to go, don't go. But if you're thinking about whether to have a baby or not, have a baby. And I kind of feel the same thing about dogs. Like, people really love their dogs. And so I kind of intellectually think if we had a dog, I would be happy with it and I would love it and I would be glad that we did it. It's just that teetering right now on the edge of the decision.
You're filled with dread.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. That is, you put your finger on it. When I think about this, I'm filled with dread. I mean, you've got a pet. What do you think of it?
Yeah, well, we have one cat, Blackjack, who I inherited when Adam and I got together. He had Blackjack before we met. Now, I have to say, I am allergic to cats. So I don't know if I'm the right person to have this conversation with. I will say Blackjack is an incredibly sweet cat. And Jack, my son, yes, we have Blackjack and Jack in our house.
And your father's name is Jack.
And my dad's name, yeah. Absolutely loves Blackjack. And we've actually asked him, Jack, if he wants a dog. And his response is that he thinks Blackjack would not like us to get a dog. So I'm off the dog hook for the moment. But I do have a cat who makes my eyes itch. It's funny. It's one of the few times I've ever heard you go against one of your true rules, which is, you know, what's fun for everybody else might not be fun for me.
Yeah.
You're fighting against that. And, you know, I guess my question is, where are you hoping this whole conversation ends? Are you hoping it ends with getting a dog or not getting a dog?
Well, I don't know. So listeners, I don't know. Like, tell me, should we get a dog? Should we not get a dog? Write us, call us. What should we think about? What should we consider? It's a huge decision. I mean, Mom said to me, because I was saying to her, oh, you know, they want to get a dog. She's like, well, you know, we lived with Paddywhack longer than we lived with either you or Elizabeth. It's a big decision.
Wow.
You know? And that's part of it, you know, is like you feel like it's not a fleeting decision. It's a big decision. And so I just... So anybody who has any advice or any anything at all, please contact me immediately.
And Gretch, I just want to go on the record as saying, controversial as this may be, I don't think you're a bad person for not wanting a dog.
Aww.
Dogs aren't for everyone. But I still hope you end up getting one.
Well, stay tuned because I think a decision's going to be forced pretty quickly here. So one way or another, it will be decided. And that's it for this episode of Happier. Remember to try this at home. Take photos of your everyday life. And please get in touch with me if you have any thoughts about whether or not to have a dog.
Thanks to our producer, Henry Malofsky, proud owner of a blind 14-year-old dog named Sammy, and two cats, Dr. Captain Cookie Breath and Fred.
Okay, we're going to need to have an explanation of that later.
From Panoply, we also want to thank Laura Mayer and her two cats, Hector and Lulu, as well as Andy Bowers and his golden retriever, Jack. My favorite name, of course.
Uh-huh.
Please let us know what you think of the show. Gretchen's on Twitter at Gretchen Rubin, and I'm at Elizabeth Kraft. Our email address is podcast@GretchenRubin.com.
And also as a reminder, if you go to GretchenRubin.com, you'll see links, anything we mentioned, photos, all the contact information you need. It's all there.
Until next week, I'm Elizabeth Kraft.
And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Thanks for joining us. Onward and upward.
This podcast is part of the Panoply Network. Check out our entire roster of podcasts at itunes.com/panoply.
Toto had a big adventure. Petey had a big appetite. Rin Tin Tin was a big hero. And Lassie had a big heart.
You've come back!
But now, the biggest dog star of them all.